all across America and around the world. This is Veterans Radio.
This is Veterans Radio.
And welcome to Veterans Radio. I am Jim Fossone with VeteransRadio.net. We are recording today from the Legal Help for Veterans studio in Northville, Michigan. Legal Help for Veterans is a veterans disability law firm. You can reach us at 800-693-4800.
We want to welcome to Veterans Radio today Karen Lloyd, the director of the Library of Congress's Veterans History Project. Karen, welcome to Veterans Radio.
Oh, Jim, thanks for having me today. I appreciate it.
Well, let's give a little background on you personally before we get into the Veterans History Project, because you have a long career of military service yourself. So why don't you explain that to our listeners?
Well, I served in the Army for 28 years, and I came in at an incredibly interesting time. I was the first Medical Service Corps female pilot, and I served in aviation for 14 years and then and branch transferred from medical service to the aviation branch when it came on board, when they created it. And then my last 14 years were as a comptroller, and I had really two fun jobs. One was as the executive officer to the comptroller of the Army, and the other, which was an awful lot of fun, was being the chief financial officer or director of resource management down at Fort Rucker, so I got to see all my buddies. So that's kind of what I did, and it was interesting because, for example, when I came in, they were introducing women into the 2nd Infantry Division and that in Korea, and that was a little bit like the Wild West. So that's my story, and I'm sticking with it.
Well, you got to spend time at Mother Rucker, and when you were the Distinguished Military Graduate for Indiana University, did you ever think you'd have a 28-year career in the military?
Oh, not one bit. I said, I'm going to stay as long as I'm having fun. And the next thing I knew, it had been 28 years. And there, I mean, it was simply amazing. And I had the pleasure of flying, I feel like all over the world. I did a lot of flying in Germany, which was an awful lot of fun. Kind of a fun story there. Went up to see the 11th ACR that was guarding the Fulda Gap, and they said, you want to fly in a Cobra? And I said, do I want to fly in a Cobra? You bet I do. And
that was a real easy question to answer.
That was an easy question. And they said, well, listen, we're going to get to this one point where we know they're checking us out, and we want you to get out, and we want you to kind of, move your head back and forth so they make sure that we see it's a girl. And it was, they said it'll blow their minds because they'll think we now have women flying in the Cobras. And this was back in the mid-80s when that was beyond anybody's imagination, wildest imagination. And so we did it, and it was an awful lot of fun. But it was, pulling silly pranks like that sometimes that just made it an awful lot of fun.
Well, it's always good to screw with the bad guys a little bit, so...
Exactly. I like you, Jim.
As you transferred out, you found your way to the position of Director of Veterans History Project for the Library of Congress. Tell us a little bit about how that came about.
Well, I feel like I'm living the dream. I was the chief of staff of the I was working for the chief of staff at the library. And he asked me to go down and look at the Veterans History Project and see what we could do to, what its strengths were and what its weaknesses were. And I did that, and I briefed Dr. Hayden, the new librarian, and the previous director decided to retire. And she called me up and said, is this something you'd consider? And I feel like I'm living the dream. I am living my passion now. In addition to being a veteran, I am the widow of a veteran. I am the sibling and the daughter of veterans. So I have seen this from all different perspectives. One of the things that really brings me joy is the fact that Congress in 2016 expanded our mission to include the Gold Star families. So now we are able to hear from those loved ones who gave the ultimate sacrifice and hear from their loved ones about them and their service and how important it is. And I am just thrilled that that's been added to our mission. But I come to work every day, and we are having a blast. In fact, we are just completing a week of celebrating veterans moving into the arts. We started on Tuesday, the 5th of November, with potters that were throwing and making cups and then talking about it in a panel that evening. And then on Wednesday, we had some occupational poets come in to talk about how their occupations influenced their poetry. So we had a veteran and a cowboy and a miner and a fisher that all came in. And then on Thursday, we had the opportunity to have Combat Paper come in and also the Telling Project. But the one that was, quite frankly, the most fun for me was Operation Song. And they are world-class and award-winning songwriters out of Nashville that pair up with veterans and use their stories to create songs. And they played a concert for us on Saturday night, along with Jamie Foxx, who's a Native American world-class fiddler. So we feel like we have truly paid tribute to veterans, and they deserve it so much.
Well, I think you actually drifted into an area I wanted you to break. And this is true with libraries and museums. And I think there's sort of a myth that, oh, those are stuffy places. You gotta whisper. There's nothing in it for me. And I think for veterans who certainly, start out as adrenaline junkies, they don't look at military museums and libraries such as this, the work that's being done that's really directed to them. So you want to bust that myth a little more wide open?
Oh, I really do. Our goal is to reach out and illuminate the different types of programs that are working with veterans. And so what I've just described and what we've just done, veterans using the arts to transition, is really one of the ways that we're trying to do that. Another fun thing that just occurred a couple weeks ago is Keith Sherman came in. He's a Navy retired petty officer. He went around the country and collected a Gold Star family interview from every state and chose the Library of Congress Veterans History Project as his repository. We are so honored that he chose us. But what was even more telling was the fact that we got over 65 family members to come for the donation ceremony. And it took my breath away to see how much those family members appreciated the fact that Keith took the time to go around the country and get these stories that would otherwise be lost. And that is why we are asking your viewers and volunteers across the nation to think about reaching out to the veterans in their lives and their communities and get those stories. Veterans tend to be hidden in plain sight. So one of the things that we're trying to do here at the Library of Congress is to illuminate veterans in a variety of different ways.
So go ahead and explain for those who maybe haven't heard you discuss this before, what the Veterans History Project is all about and how it can be used by individuals.
Oh, absolutely. The Veterans History Project, as I mentioned, reaches out to veterans across the nation and asks them to talk to the veterans in their lives and their communities. Of the 3,400 collections we got last year, over 3,200 of them were given to us by volunteers. And the veterans keep their copyrights. And I think that's the least we can do for given their service to our country. And folks that use them, it's a wide variety of folks, everything from authors to documentarians to filmmakers, scholars, members of Congress, family members, and even museums. Just a wide variety. A couple of examples. I don't know if you've heard of Liza Monday. She wrote the book on the Code Girls, the Code Breakers in World War II. And these were college women, and they were asked two questions. They were asked, do you like crossword puzzles, and are you engaged to get married? And the ones that said no, they weren't engaged to get married, and two, that they love crossword puzzles, were asked to take some additional tests. And those that passed got to be code breakers, but they were told, tell everybody you're a government secretary, and you just file papers. And the fun stories that have come from that, one, Liza said, if not for our research librarian here at the Library of Congress that helped her understand the content we had on Code Girls, she might never have thought she had enough material for a book. But secondly, we had a national reunion where five of these Code Girls, and they're in their mid-90s, came and to be celebrated along with over 40 family members. And what an amazing time that was last March. It was so wonderful to see how our collections made a difference in these women's lives, because they were telling stories. One of my favorites was that she went into an intelligence museum, like a spy museum, and she saw the purple, which was what the Japanese used to break the code and why we were successful at Midway. And she said to her family and her grown children, well, I guess I can tell you what I did during the war. And her husband says, oh, dear, you were a government secretary. And she says, no, Harold, I wasn't. I broke codes, and I worked on that machine. And then she took about 30 minutes with her grown kids and her husband in absolute awe and shock about what she had done during the war. And she felt like all the Code Girls, that they couldn't talk about it because that was their last known point. And it's so amazing that now those stories, most of them were taken with them to the graves, are now known. And what an honor it is to be able to celebrate what they've done.
And if you're just a general public John Q and dad or mom, grandpa, uncle, never talked about their military service, you can use the Veterans History Project at the Library of Congress to maybe find somebody who was in the same unit or battle and get a flavor of what granddad took to the grave with him, couldn't you?
That's exactly right, and that happens all the time. You can go up our website, loc.gov/vets, and you can look. We have a search engine, and you can look by state, you can look by unit, you can look by name to see the different stories that we have available. Another thing that I like to recommend folks do first is go up Experiencing War. We put together 4 episodes a year, and I say we loosely. We have an amazing research librarian that cultivates our collections and pulls out by themes, and we have everything from the art of war to medics to the Tuskegee Airmen to women in aviation to chaplains. Again, 64 episodes that dive deep into our collections so that you get a sense of what this selfless service was like. And I would encourage everyone to reach out in their community and in their family. What a perfect time to prepare now for Thanksgiving when families are going to gather and ask questions. We have a series of questions on our website, and we're looking for the arc of the story. So what were your parents, what did your parents do? And one of my favorites is, why the heck did you sign up? And then followed closely by, so how did you get from home to that first duty station? Now, there's a question veterans haven't thought about in a long time, and it gets the juices going. And then you ask them, so who was that first person at that first duty station that made an impression on you? And more often than not, they know the name. And they go, oh, my God, Sergeant Brown. And then they start talking about these drill sergeants. And it's absolutely fascinating because generally these are things they haven't thought about for an awful long time. And it unlocks other memories. And that's really what we're looking for.
Well, let me back you up. You mentioned 64 episodes. Are these videos? Are they audio? How does someone access these?
Well, they're all digitized, and you can go right up the website, and some are interviews, some are artwork, some are letters, some are photographs. So it's really a mix. And one of the special things that our research librarian completed for D-Day, the Normandy invasion, was a story map. And in the story map, she takes 4 different veterans, and where they connect is on the 6th of June in and around Normandy. Everything from a glider pilot to a bomber pilot to a combat engineer to an infantryman, and the different ways they got from being inducted into the military through to D-Day and then after, and some made it home and some didn't. And we were able to use other collections because, as you mentioned, we've got collections of people that serve together. So in one collection, they might talk about a place but not have any photographs, but we're able to go to a different collection where the individual took and donated photographs. So we were able to use a variety of different collections to tell these four veteran stories. And it's simply amazing. If your listeners get a chance, I would highly recommend that they think about doing that as well.
We're talking to Army Colonel retired Karen Lloyd, who's the director of the Library of Congress's Veterans History Project, about the wealth of information that's available on that site at www.loc.gov/vets. Colonel, we often think history and we think back to World War II. Maybe we think about Vietnam. We don't often think about Korea. But is this project also capturing things out of what will become our history, Iraq and Afghanistan?
Oh, absolutely. We start in World War I and we go through the current conflict, and we have some really amazing stories. For example, Sergeant Shiloh Harris, his father served in World War II and Korea, and his dad served in Vietnam, and he had such pride in their service. But he was a slow starter by his own admission. He said, you know, I wanted to join, I just never got around to it. And he said, but on September 11th, he said, I was 27 years old. I look what happened to our nation and said, now's the time. And he signed in, and his dad said, just don't go infantry. And he said, oh, okay. So the recruiter said, well, how'd you like to be a cav soldier? And so he signed up to be a cavalry soldier. And it's like, oh, my goodness. I don't think he fully appreciated what he was doing. And what he ended up doing, he'd had two tours in Iraq. And unfortunately, during his second tour, his CAV's mission was to detect the IED, the mines. And he got blown up, he and his comrades. And he had severe third-degree burns on 35% of his body. He was in a medically induced coma for 48 days, and he kind of came out of it, spent 3 years recovering, and he said, by his own admission, he said, you know, I started by having a pity party and realized, you know, I am the leader of my own destiny, and if I'm going to make a difference in this world, it's up to me. And from that point, he moved forward. He's now a motivational speaker. Listening to his interview is it's heartbreaking, but at the same time, incredibly uplifting. And every year he celebrates his Alive Day, which is the 19th of February, which is the day he was blown up and said, it started and gave me a new life. He says, you know, everything in life is a gift. And sometimes it may not be the gift you want, but you realize that it has become the challenge that's going to make you who you're going to be. And what an incredible soldier. And to hear him, and we got his interview. He came here to the library. And I was on a high for a couple of days after you know, meeting and listening with him. Just what a super soldier. What a motivational speaker. And taking something bad and making it wonderful is all I can describe. But those are the kinds of stories that we have in our archives. So we are interested in everyone's story. We've started to discover that Vietnam veterans are starting to want to tell their story. And we're so pleased because they weren't given the homecoming in most instances that they truly deserve. And we are hoping that by telling their story and by making sure that their story is not lost, we'll be able to give them a gift of immortality.
Well, these stories, which have so many pearls of wisdom and so much motivation in them and so much power in them, is why they need to be captured and why people need to listen to them. And it's why we do what we do on Veterans Radio, telling veteran stories, Director Lloyd. You mentioned that something like 3,200 of the stories you received last year were from volunteers. Tell us how groups or others can volunteer and be involved in the good work that the Veterans History Project at the Library of Congress is engaged in.
I am so glad you asked, because it can be either groups or individuals, and we have folks across the nation, a lot of Red Cross, a lot of Daughters of the American Revolution, a lot of high schools, some colleges. But the way that you do it is you go vohp@loc.gov. It's our email address. Every email that comes in is logged, and I get a chance to see what the disposition of each of those are. We also have a toll-free message line, 888-371-5848. By calling or by emailing us, we can reach out to you. We can provide to you at no cost to you a trained oral historian to come and teach a class. And something that we recommend is what we did both in Washington State this past summer and also with Senator Enzi in Wyoming, is we teach a workshop in the morning and we ask folks to bring veterans in the afternoon. So in Everett, Washington, we taught a workshop in the morning and they brought veterans in the afternoon. And at the Everett Library, they set aside 4 quiet rooms and we brought back 17 or 18 interviews. And then at the Laramie Community College in Laramie, Wyoming, with Senator Enzi in the morning, we taught the workshop on how to do it. And then that afternoon, we brought home 16 interviews. And the reason it's important to use that model is because when you do the class, if you don't immediately use it, you lose it. And we discovered that people don't gain a level of confidence that this is something they can do. But by immediately using it, they kind of walk away and say, I can do that. That's not hard. And that's exactly right. It isn't hard. If you have a smartphone or a tablet, get a couple lavalier mics and a tripod so you don't have to, you know, hold the phone. You've got an interview studio. Get somewhere quiet. Get a veteran's home. You can do the interview. It's not hard to do. We have sample questions. If there's Gold Star families out there or people that are interested in working with Gold Star families, I encourage them, please, to call us. We actually have separate questions for Gold Star families because if you think about it, the perspective is different whether you're the spouse, the parents, the child, or the sibling. So we want to have sets of questions that are appropriate for each audience, each individual.
Colonel Lloyd, would you repeat that email address and phone number if people are interested in volunteering and either having folks come out or receive the questions and packages one more time?
Absolutely. vohp@loc.gov, Victor Oscar Hotel Papa @loc.gov, or 888-371-5848. And we have field kits, sample questions, we have lanyards, we have a variety of things that we can provide to you. You just simply need to ask.
Well, it's really important work that is being done in the capturing of these stories so that, again, whether it's historians or authors or just family members want to know kind of what really went on over there. Capturing these stories is so, so important. I guess I had to ask, if you had to pick one thing that happened in the last year that you think, wow, this is really why we're doing what we're doing, is there just one thing you can pick?
Well, one of the highlights for me was when Auburn, and this has happened several years in a row, but this last one was incredibly special. Professor Wilson at Auburn University, his students get with the Tuskegee Elementary 5th grade class, and together they interview veterans and family members, and then the college students come up, and then we live stream back to the 5th graders, and the 5th graders that were involved with helping to get their family stories, we have a conversation about what it was like as a part of the donation ceremony. And I am always so impressed by what these youngsters get from this interaction. I love that the fact that we're partnering college students with elementary kids. I love that we're looking at families so that we're passing along history. And I love the fact that they choose the library as their repository. But what it really says to me is, you know, this can be an intergenerational project. Anybody can do it. And we are here to help and hope that your listeners will choose the Veterans History Project as a way to connect with the veterans in their lives and their communities.
Again, great work that's being done. It's another demonstration of myths that are being broken. You know, I think so often our kids in school say, oh, history, that's the old stuff. That's boring. But when you make it come alive, when you do that interview, when you sit across the table and talk to the veteran, you've now made history alive, just like you've demonstrated that a library isn't this quiet place or a museum is a place that you should walk into. So I think breaking another myth there, Colonel Karen Lloyd, Army retired director of Veterans History Project, I want to thank you for taking some time today to talk to Veterans Radio.
Well, Jim, I can't thank you enough for having us and helping us spread the word about how important it is to listen to the veterans in our lives.
And I want to thank everybody for listening to Veterans Radio today. I am Jim Fossone. It's been a pleasure to be your host. I'm a veterans disability lawyer at Legal Help for Veterans, and you can reach us at 800-693-4800 or legalhelpforveterans.com on the web. You can follow Veterans Radio on Facebook and listen to its podcasts and internet radio shows by going to veteransradio.net. And until next time, you are dismissed.
If you have a VA claim denied by the Board of Veterans Appeals, contact Legal Help for Veterans at 1-800-693-4800. They're experts in handling cases before the U.S. Court of Appeals for Veterans Claims. Their number again, 1-800-693-4800.
Veterans Radio needs you. If you like our shows that are informative, surprising stories, and relevant information on what's happening at the VA and the military, we'd like your support. Individual support of $5 to $50 a month or corporate sponsorship of $1,000 to $10,000 would be welcomed. You can go to veteransradio.net, click on the sponsorship or support tab, pay online, and keep Veterans Radio on the air.